the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Welcome to Guilt Free Post in Soho in London. It's the February roundtable from Radio Today. I'm Trevor Down. Let's see who's joining us.
Hello, I'm Nick Goodman. I'm a radio consultant. I do most of my work in Europe, and in this post-Brexit era, I'm currently in transition.
Are you having a period of reflection?
Absolutely, of course.
Okay. On Nick's left.
My name's Chris North. I'm a talent manager and the owner of North Media Talent. I've done this a long time and worked with lots of presenters.
Yes, you have. And on your left.
Hi, I'm Moona and I'm a radio producer and I work for National Prison Radio and I produce most of my content from behind bars.
And you got an award, didn't you, at the Audio Production Awards?
Yes, I was nominated. I didn't win, but yes, I was nominated for Best Station Sound.
I was going to ask you first, because you work with a lot of young people, why is it they don't listen to the radio? And yet, we keep hearing about young people wanting to be on the radio.
I don't think it's fair to say all young people don't listen to the radio. I think quite a lot of us do listen to the radio. We listen more on demand than we do live sometimes. But yeah, we listen.
But people want to be on it, don't they?
Yes, a lot of young people want to be on the radio. They want their voices heard. They want their opinions heard. So for that reason, yeah, they want to be on the radio.
Chris, we talked on last month's programme about the Radio 1 New Voices at Christmas initiative. Mm-hmm. Are you still finding that young people are coming to you and wanting to be on the wireless?
Absolutely. I mean, when Radio 1 announced they were going to do that, I did send Alid a text to say, are you completely bonkers?
Because that was good for your career.
And I just thought, oh my God, he's going to have to listen to all that stuff. And he did, and they all did. And I thought, what an amazing experiment. You know, those presenters wanted Christmas off and put 35 new voices on it. But what's interesting is he got thousands of people wanting to be on from across the country and a completely huge, diverse range of presenters with different skill sets, different experiences, coming from different parts of the sector, I suppose. And I've had messages from those people afterwards. I've had, I know people who tried to get the show and they didn't get anything. As people do know, I've spent a lot of time with student radio. And the amount of people who want to be on air and also be in production, but on air, it's not gone away. People really, really want to be on the radio. The problem is, where do we put them? Because the industry has shifted over the last year and a half, 2 years or whatever, and I find it very difficult to find a platform for some of these new talent to grow. I refer to that Thanos snap moment where, you know, a certain radio group clicked its finger and half of the presenters vanished. And it's really difficult to inspire and to coach and to help presenters when you think you're brilliant, you should be on this particular brand, you'd be fantastic on this, but there is no scope or place to put them. And as an agent, I'm finding that quite frustrating.
Okay, Nick, so you've worked over many years in particularly commercial music radio, where a lot of these people would have found a home in the past. Does the fact that there are fewer opportunities for them mean that commercial music radio isn't as good, or does it mean that it's actually perversely got better? You asked me for some curveballs.
Has it got better as a result? I think it's clearly got more difficult for young talent to get on the radio and the networked evening shows and the automation and all that kind of stuff. There are still loads of young people who want to be on the radio. I'd agree with that. I think there's also loads of other things they want to do as well. And so there are perhaps fewer than there used to be, where radio was one of the main choices. Has radio got better as a result of these? No, I don't think so. I think, you know, I like the fact that you could listen to new talent that was on in kind of strange times of the day and night, and you'd go, oh, that's interesting, this person's great, you know. I remember the first time you'd hear kind of Chris Moyles or something like that, and I think the first time I heard him, he was doing a late night Capital show at the weekend or something like that. I was like, hey, this guy's interesting, you know. And so those opportunities have gone.
But when you go around Europe, which you do, consulting for radio groups. Does your work lead to a certain kind of homogeneity? Are there now rules for what makes a good jock or a good presenter that means that gradually they all begin to sound the same?
No, not really. I mean, I'm working with a whole load of different radio stations, and one of the key things is to find new talent. And who are they? Where do they come from? Let's find people who don't sound like radio presenters is one of my key things. So if I hear a tape or someone's doing a live show and I have a little listen to it and they sound like a radio presenter, I'm kind of less inclined to say, hey, they're interesting. So trying to find diverse voices, different attitudes, people who don't come from a traditional radio background or, you know, want to be like the established radio DJ, those are the people I'm interested in.
Moona, what works for you when you're talent spotting?
What works for me is the same, is hearing voices that you don't always hear on the radio. And that's one of the most frustrating things. When you switch on the radio, most of the voices sound the same. And so I'm always looking for voices that sound different and, you know, can bring different types of energy. And that's what I'm looking for, because, you know, we don't always get that on mainstream radio, especially like people that sound like me, you know, northerners from a different cultural background, you know, things that we could relate to. So, yeah, that's what I'm always looking for.
And I was just going to say about the Radio 1 experiment, I didn't listen to all of it because obviously I had a Christmas life to have, but there were some great presenters on there. And what I thought they'd done very, very well, I mean, what a complicated thing to try and do, to put 35 new people on. There were some brilliant new specialist presenters, which is really exciting. There were some great daytime people who were on, you know, they were live. Obviously, they don't get as much scope to be able to be the big names that Radio 1 currently have. But what it did do was it sounded fresh, and it sounded, without doing any disrespect, it sounded like a very, very polished student radio station, because the voices were relevant. And I'm not saying any disrespect to any Radio 1 presenter, but there were some new things, there were some new angles coming from those particular presenters, because they've got different experiences and they've not come through that huge machine that the other Radio 1 presenters have.
The trick is as well that Radio 1 made it sound like they were Radio 1 presenters, but with a fresh angle as well. So they'd kind of been plugged into the vibe of the station, and I thought they did a great job on that.
Because I'm hearing people say, well, there's no opportunities anymore on the radio. So if we're going to get across what we want to talk about, we've got to do it with online and podcasts. Do you hear that from your generation, Moona?
Yeah, I hear that a lot. I hear that from the people I work with. You know, I come across an awful lot of talent, and it's really frustrating when you've got nowhere to direct them to. So we're always telling them to polish up and use other media platforms to get heard. It's a shame that there aren't those opportunities in mainstream radio anymore. Well, you know, they're limited. So that's a big frustration, because it's really hard to break through, and because there's such big names, and how do you compete with them when you're starting out? And, you know, how do you gain the experience when you don't really have those opportunities, especially like platforms like the BBC? They get inundated with applications. And I remember when I was starting out in radio, I was like, oh my God, am I ever going to get a job? You know, it was just endless knocking at doors, and then ended up going through the back door from getting somebody else to who recognised my talent. So it's really frustrating, especially when you're a new talent. But, you know, there are opportunities, and if you're passionate, then, you know, you will break those barriers.
Well, I know I wouldn't have got my chance to be on the radio if it wasn't for the Radio City evening show, you know, because that was a show that was off peak. I could go and make my mistakes there, but that doesn't really exist anymore, that opportunity to do kind of good old-fashioned ILR evening shows, because, you know, it's all kind of networked.
I think there's just two other things I was going to say. There's Paul Sylvester and Absolute. They've done a really good job of opening the doors to young presenters. Jay Lawrence is now just doing evenings. He came from BBC Local, but also student radio before that. Dan Noble, who's doing the weekends for them. So there are some programme controllers who have flexibility within their schedules to be able to do this. It's just, that's just two people. And, you know, then there's the Hits, and they've done something similar. They've experimented on new talent. I think sometimes we do get hung up on them having to have a name and be famous before they're on, which also closes the doors. But the other thing is, I would say that BBC Local Radio now, more than ever, has to have a spotlight put on it to find new talent, because whilst the world is getting smaller, those stations, the BBC, should have the opportunity to be able to put those new voices, and I know they have that New Voices project, and it's important that young people and new people, not necessarily just young people, get a voice on some BBC radio stations.
and community radio, of course, has a big role to play now.
We take that for granted, though, don't we? And that's unfortunate because it does have an important part now in what we're all doing out there.
OK, let's move on. It's the February edition of the Radio Today Roundtable. Big news since we last congregated here is the cutbacks at the BBC. Obviously, people talk mostly about television, but it is going to have huge ramifications in radio, isn't it? Five Live losing people. I think the biggest issue is the whole question of consolidating reporter teams so that the individual programmes on Radio 4 and Newsbeat and other places just won't necessarily have their own singular voices.
Well, there's always a criticism, isn't there, when the BBC turn up with about eight different people to one event, and they're from, this one's from Radio 1, and this one's from Five Live, and the Radio 4 thing is, you know, and I quite like it where you get the presenters that are maybe revoicing stuff with a slightly different vibe or slightly different angle on stuff. So is there some economies that could be applied there? I think there probably is, but there's pressure on the BBC at the moment, obviously, to cut the 80 million quid or whatever it is.
Well, Chris, you know a lot of people at the BBC. As I do, I've never known the morale as bad as it is at the moment. I worked there during a number of cutbacks. I mean, the story of the BBC really is about cuts, isn't it? Has been for 20, 30 years. But there's a real sense of, God, again?
I know. And I think it's, I don't know enough about BBC News to understand how many people work and how many people are therefore leaving. Although I did notice during the Brexit bit and the general election, I've never heard so many different people doing something from Brussels or somewhere. And I'm thinking, I know Chris Mason and Adam and Katka and Laura.
Adam should do it all.
They can't do everything. I know, but it's like, oh, God, I didn't even know they had another one. But it's I do think morale is low. And I think that this cuts thing has been hanging over them, as you say, for years now. And how does that impact on network radio? And I think that's what producers and mainly management worry about, because they're working doubly hard to make more content for different platforms on less.
Well, of course, Muna, what a lot of people in the BBC who are a lot older than you are doing is saying, well, we're doing it for Muna and her friends. So are you impressed by what's happening at the BBC, that they're putting all this resource into making shows for you?
Well, I hope they're putting those resources into making shows for us and better shows. But I also worry about where this extra money is going to go. And is it going to create, you know, more platforms, more voices, more diversity? Or is it just going to go, you know, I just don't understand what the intentions of this is. It's really sad that, you know, so many people are losing their jobs. But I do agree that the BBC News needed to consolidate because it's a lot of duplication. You know, we all heard that throughout Brexit. We hear that all the time. When you go, you know, because I work in a small stations and small production companies, when I go somewhere and then the BBC are there, they've got this humongous team and, you know, there's just me with my recorder and I'm like, hi. So I do understand that as well. So yeah, it is quite complex, but I just do hope that they use the money that they save to do a lot more.
Well, just as we come on air, the BBC have announced a raft of new programmes that are just going to be exclusively on BBC Sounds, and I just had a quick look at it, and there's a whole load of interesting stuff in there.
Gemma Collins?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure there'll be a second series. But, you know, there's certainly, they've got to reflect this move from live and linear to a more on-demand world, and I think they're trying to shape it for the future as well, and I think it was James Pennell said, the incumbent who moves last falls hardest. So I think there's a sense that they've got to move. And yes, some of these cuts are being forced upon them, but it's an opportunity to reshape as well.
Haven't they got to win some friends, though, the BBC? It does seem to me at the moment they're not just friendless in government, but I'm meeting people now who's saying, do you know what, I've always loved the BBC, but really what with, you know, the gender pay issues and so many other things, just easy, simple mistakes that are being made. They're losing that public sympathy.
And a great time to announce the licence fee increase and there's a whole big discussion about that. But, you know, when I travel around a lot, and the BBC is still held up there as a AAA rated gold standard of broadcasters. And so even though I don't work for them, I'm immensely proud of them. And I think we will rue the day if we start to kind of chip away and the whole discussion around the licence fee. I think it's very, very dangerous.
But what's in the licence fee for you, Muna? Why would you pay it, in fact? Do you pay it?
Of course I pay it.
Oh, of course. That is the right answer.
You might be decriminalised soon if you don't, yeah. So we'll see on that one.
I'm not breaking the law. I do pay it. You know, I have this love and hate relationship with the BBC. I do love producing content for the BBC, which I do. And it's of the most standard. And growing up as a kid, it was a dream to work at the BBC. But there are times where they do let us down. Mainly for me is the diversity thing. I think that is the biggest letdown. And like BBC News the other day did a massive blunder with Kobe Bryant. You know, it's things like that where you're just like, oh my God, what are you doing? You know, you need to do better. You're a licensee. You have responsibilities.
Just tell everybody who didn't see it what happened with the Kobe Bryant issue.
They used LeBron James's clip instead of Kobe Bryant when during...
Even though the guy was wearing a shirt which clearly said James on the back.
Yes. Yes, which is a massive blunder. And, you know, some people could say, oh, it's just an innocent mistake. But for a lot of people in this country and, you know, for people like me, it was quite painful to see because you expect better from the BBC. And if it had been, you know, somebody else of advice or diversity would have recognised that. So that's why it's so important to have journalists, producers from all kinds of backgrounds so they can spot these mistakes and know the ramifications of these things.
I mean, I totally agree with that. I think in a way it's an odd compliment to the BBC because we expect them to get it right all the time. And then when they don't, it's a big thing, you know, so it's a compliment to them for getting it right most of the time. But I agree, it was a bit of a faux pas.
Let's pause, if we may, for a commercial message.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
It's the February roundtable. Muna Ahmed is here, Nick Goodman is here, and Chris North is here. Nick, you spend, as I said, a lot of time being carbon non-neutral. Can I say that?
I plant a lot of trees every year, for the record.
I hope you do. But most of the time, you're whizzing around the skies going to advise people. You were just talking about how the BBC is still held in high regard. What do they think of British radio, broadly speaking, in amongst what Boris calls our friends and colleagues?
Broadly speaking, I think it's viewed upon very favourably. The BBC has a lot to do with that. It does a lot of things very well, and it's big and shiny, and it shouts about them. So at radio conferences, there's usually a good representative from the BBC talking about something innovative or a new programme idea, and you find a lot of radio stations across Europe look to the BBC at what they're doing, and they go, OK, that's interesting, and you see various different imitations and versions of those things popping up over Europe.
You're on the committee, aren't you, for Radio Days Europe?
I am.
You usually are.
Yes.
Do you want to just give it a plug briefly?
Well, we're going to be in Lisbon at the end of March. There's a fantastic lineup of speakers and sessions, of course, from the UK. We've got James Pennell, who's going to be doing a keynote, which is great. So he's coming along and talking about the vision that BBC Radio have and BBC Audio. Lorna Clark, I'm going to be doing a session with Lorna to talk about the future of music radio.
That's a big booking.
We've got Lorna, and also, I can exclusively reveal, we've got Rebecca Frank as well, the new content director from KISS, on that same session as well. So we're going to try and unpack the future of music radio, music formats, the relationship with the record industry, all that kind of stuff.
And I'm sure you've got a lot of people from Global as well.
Global have we've been trying to get a few representatives from there, and true to form, they're not quite playing ball as yet, but we continue to make the phone calls, and one day I will succeed at getting someone over.
Chris, do you go to these conferences?
I've never been.
You should come along. What are you waiting for, man?
You know what? I've never been because I've thought, well, as an agent, what do I get out of it apart from seeing you all?
Okay.
Well, you get to engage with new people and spot other talent.
I guess, perhaps. But finding new talent in Europe. I can't even put them on here.
Well, let me... it's a tough regime to get on this podcast.
It's quite difficult.
Let me suggest that as an agent, it would be great for you to understand the future direction of the radio and audio industry, where the trends, where it's going, and how that will impact upon your business.
I might appreciate that.
Going to have to stop you there, as they say on the Radio 4 Today programme. While we're just mentioning Today, does anybody listen to the Today programme in the morning?
I do.
You noticed... Well, you will have noticed, of course, that there are no government ministers on it anymore.
No.
Has it got better? I rather like not having Chris Grayling whining on about stuff.
Me too.
Yay!
It is nice to hear. Although I do think they're working doubly hard now to try and fill the time. Because you know that first, it's like, there's that first sweep of it and you think, oh God, are we in some sort of Groundhog Day? But then you realise it's the content, isn't it, that they need. Because Brexit's sort of over, I think it's quite refreshing, actually. I think they struggled during that last 3 years with that programme because it was a broken record, and I think people were switching off because of it. There was none of that debate, really. It was just lots of people shouting.
As long as it doesn't mean more Vox Pops, I'm all in favour of fewer government ministers.
Or packages of sorts.
Yeah, Moona, what do you think?
I'm the same. I just found that programme to be quite repetitive and quite dull, and I was like, come on, give me a new voice, give me a new perspective, show me something else. So, yeah, I struggled with it.
Now, there's a long read in The Guardian today as we record this about Magic FM, as it used to be called, Magic Radio. And one of the points it makes is that perhaps that kind of easy listening format is more attractive than it used to be because a lot of talk radio is less attractive because we don't want all the windbags and the repetition. What do you make of it?
It's an oasis of calm in a deeply destructive and negative world. It's kind of like
that's the new strap line, isn't it?
Tony Morey's writing that.
Absolutely.
You can have that one. I'll send the invoice. It's a comfy jumper that you slip on, isn't it? It's that it provides that familiar warmth, and those formats all around the world continue to do that, and that blend of old nostalgia never goes out of fashion, and the best of the new. It's a winning format, and they deliver it very well.
What do you make of the spin-offs? I was listening to Magic at the Musicals this morning, which has, you know, it played literally in the half hour I was listening, it played Top Hat by Fred Astaire, and then it played Mustang Sally. That seemed an odd...
Yeah, I think it's clearly aimed at people who are into musicals, and if everything comes from a musical, it's on that radio station. So you get the extreme variety of that, and sure, there's a place for that, and I'm sure they've done the research and the numbers. But I really enjoyed the soul one. Funnily enough, I had a Rajar diary not so long ago. Believe it or not, they knocked on my door.
Conflict of interest.
This is actually a true story.
Because this is a true
first
story.
Person that's ever told me that they've seen somebody.
So they knocked on my door and said, would you like to do some research on radio listening? And I said, come in, you've come to the right place, my friend. And anyway, Magic Soul got a bunch of ticks on that. I enjoy the mix of music on that. It's a good one, yeah.
Does all this stuff mean much to you, Moon? All the different Magics, the different Absolutes, you know, all these new stations?
Yes, they do. I listen to Magic as well. It's like you said, it's a comfort blanket. It's nostalgia. It's music and stations your parents listened to when you were younger because it was non-offensive. And yeah, it just takes you back. I listen to it all the time and I really do enjoy it.
And they probably wouldn't think it was for you.
Yeah, they wouldn't. And the fact that Stormzy said that he listens to it was brilliant.
And James Corden.
Yeah, and James Corden. I was super excited because it just breaks that mould of what people think that young people are and that stereotype. We do love old music. We love all kinds of things. And so, yeah, I'm really glad that Stormzy said that, and I hope one of his tracks gets on there.
And Magic at the Musicals is, I think, a good thing because you don't have Elaine Page waffling on.
That's always.
So I think that's a good thing. Frankly.
Elaine Page probably not represented by North Media talent, no. I'm guessing. Let's take another message, and then we'll come back and find out what you've all been listening to.
Thank you, Trevor. Yes, I'm here with a script read to tell you all about the fantastic work that Clean Feed do. If you're starting the new year with a new project and you need a way of connecting in great quality with somebody somewhere different to where you are, or using a browser rather than an ISDN line or something like that, then Clean Feed might be the solution you're looking for. It's great for doing OBs, doing interviews for your podcast or your radio show, and maybe co-hosting your show from the other side of the world. Clean Feed's been designed for radio people and for podcasters as well. It's really simple to use and connect in great quality over the web using a browser, and you can even record within the browser as well if you are making a podcast. There's a completely free version. Clean Feed won't cost you anything to get started, just 30 seconds or so to get signed up and having your first go within a few minutes. You can find out more about it at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net. Moonahmed.net. Back to you, Trevor.
Thank you very much. It's the February Roundtable. I'm Trevor Dan. We've got Moona Ahmed, Nick Goodman and Chris North here. We're going to find out what they've been listening to. Two things, either a radio show or a podcast. Let's go to Nick first.
I'm going to start with a podcast, and it's the Bob Lefsetz podcast. Bob Lefsetz is a music industry critic and analyst. He has the Lefsetz Letter, which is a kind of email that he sends out with lots of comment on music industry stuff, streaming, radio, tech. And he does a podcast, and it's with iHeart now, so they've kind of snapped it up. And recent people on it, Giles Martin, Moby, Diane Warren, and the clip I want to play is a bit from an in-depth interview with Pete Tong. And it's an absolutely fascinating interview, not only to get Pete Tong's life story, but Bob is really good at asking blunt questions. He's the king of the blunt question, and you can hear a few here.
I got remarried. My second wife used to live in LA, so she always wanted to come back.
Is she American or
no? She's Brazilian, but she lived in LA when I met her, and then got deeper into this WME relationship. And you know, the center of WME, at least back then, was Los Angeles. And I thought, you know, with EDM blowing up in America, and it's like if I was going to make the most of that opportunity, now was the time. So it was 2013. We went for it. I told my mum I was coming for a year. So
okay,
she's
how
not
many
very
kids?
Happy with me.
How many kids do you have?
I've got four and two stepkids, so six between us.
Okay, and how many with the first wife? How many with the second wife? Sorry, there are only two wives?
Only two wives.
Okay, so the first wife
was three kids. And
okay,
then,
so the first had three kids, and the second one you have one together, and you have two stepkids.
Yeah.
So what, you know, if you had your first kid in 1990, what are your kids up to?
They're all in music, actually, amazingly, and I never really pushed them into it. They've kind of done it by their own design. So my eldest Joe goes by the name of Joe Hertz as an artist. Didn't take my name, which I quite think is quite cool.
Right. And does everybody get along?
Yeah, yeah.
The first wife ever get remarried?
No. That's a bit trickier.
Okay.
There's Bob Lefsetz. Thanks for bringing that in. And thanks for choosing the clip in advance. I wish panelists would do this,
I'm
Nick.
I'm so sorry. I'm not very technical.
Let's go to Moona for your first choice.
I've picked a podcast, and it is called Have You Heard George's Podcast?
George the Poet?
Yes, George the Poet. I picked this podcast because I think it's absolutely brilliant, and it's broken all the molds of podcasts, how podcasts are produced. It's produced by Ben Brick, and it's beautifully made. It's poetic. It's fantastic storytelling, and it's about identity and, you know, reflecting the communities that we come from and the battles that we have, you know, being Black British and all the things that are going on around the world. And it's, I find it absolutely inspiring. And we do a lot of work with George, so I really do like that podcast.
He is such a good example, I think, of somebody who is now considered to be somebody you would book for a mainstream radio show, who a year ago wouldn't have had a look in. And that's something that podcasting is doing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And he's engaging with audiences that podcasts have generally not been able to reach, and many of radio stations haven't been able to reach. And I love the fact that, you know, it's now on BBC Sound as well. So George appeals to a great deal of young people and is giving them a voice as well, which is one of the reasons why I love the podcast.
Here's George.
See, when it comes to stories they're expected to tell, our young people often feel they lack choices. So throughout this podcast, I've offered different ways of presenting Black voices. In episode 10, I did the romance thing to show intimacy on a grown man thing, because the depiction of relationships in our music can sometimes be a bit cartoonish. There's a lot of focus on sex and melodrama, never just the young Barack and Michelle Obama. I don't write about relationships much, but when I do, I'm the worst offender. There's always disappointment or a burst of temper. But that doesn't fully reflect my own experience, and it definitely doesn't reflect my work's agenda. I also included a bit of fantasy because I want young writers to think expansively. When I was 15 years old writing bars, it never occurred to me to talk about flying cars. I learned from the elders who focused on certain aspects of this life of ours, but it does get repetitive, and it's always a bit self-absorbed and negative. Which you could say about this podcast, to be fair, so yeah, I guess it's all relative.
There's George, the poet Chris North.
Can I just ask a question? Because the world of podcasting is sort of elusive to me, just purely because I think I'm a radio snob and I'm late to the game. Where do you find all your stuff? Do people tell? Is it like Netflix when people tell you there's a new thing out there and that's where you're going to seek it? Because I don't know how to find these podcasts.
Well, I've got Apple. I look on there. I search for podcasts, word of mouth. I usually know producers who've made it and stuff like that.
I think if you listen to your podcast via an Apple or a Google or even BBC Sounds, you've only got to put it on and it turns into one of those recommendation things, just like Amazon. You know, if you like that, you'll like this. Yeah.
I think that's probably what's happening to me now.
So you're a late adopter.
I really am. And I was at this Pods Up North conference before Christmas, and it was a brilliant conference. I'd never been to anything like that before. And actually, what I think it's because I went in there thinking, oh, God, what's all this about? And I sort of described it by the end as it's like going into one of those really sort of dodgy clubs that you didn't think you should go into, but you quite enjoy. But by the end of it, I'd realised what podcasting was and what the talent scope was, you know, considering I made a podcast back in the day at Wise Buddha years ago, to find out that there's all this community out there of talented people. I just think maybe that's the answer to where some of these platforms of people should go. So that's my naivety coming across.
So have you brought one to recommend?
I have.
Let's have it.
Because it was recommended by a friend, and it's really funny. It's called Gossip Mongers. It's with Joe Wilkinson, David Earle, and Poppy Hillstead. Basically, they read out unsubstantiated rumours by listeners, who are sent by listeners, basically gossip and silly stories that they've remembered from school or that they know from their town, and they read them out, and it's very rude, and it sort of sums up my sense of humour, and it's very funny.
A few months after that, Nan started to comment on loud music coming from Len's flat, sometimes at all hours, and a loud woman's voice with Len shouting back at her.
Right.
She became increasingly concerned when she walked past Len's kitchen window one afternoon and could hear him shouting, "You've been a very naughty widow, and now I'll have to teach you."
Naughty widow.
You've been a very naughty widow. Only to then glance through the window to see what looked like a young woman dressed in nothing but a black coat tied to a chair with Len stood over her, gyrating. The police turned up, forced entry into Len's flat, and apparently, to their horror, amongst some 30-odd empty gin bottles, they found Len passed out along with a female mannequin. Dressed in fishnet stockings, wrapped in a large black hooded bathrobe, along with the photo of the then Scottish widow's model, Amanda Lamb, glued to its face.
That's Gossip Mongers.
Gossip Mongers is filthy. I mean, it really is. Sorry, filthy, Nick. Yeah.
Let's hope I've managed to find a broadcastable bit then.
It's great.
You're going to have trouble.
Yeah. Nick, your second choice.
So let me set the scene. I've dropped my daughter off somewhere on a Saturday morning, and I'm in the car and I'm flicking around on my DAB radio in the car, and I come across a radio station and I think, this is strange because this sounds like a pirate radio station and it's on DAB. This is bizarre. I didn't know we had pirates on DAB. The station is Centreforce 88.3, and it started off as a pirate radio station in 1989. It was on for about a year, and it was about the time when the rave scene was exploding all around London and the M25. It was only on for about a year or so, disappeared for a while. It came back in 2017 on the London 2 multiplex, and it still sounds like a pirate radio station. The show is called the Pineapple Music Club, and it's presented by a chap called Master Magri. I believe that's not his real name. And it's incredible. It's a retro music show like you've never heard before. And it mixes music from New Order to Billy Griffin or Phyllis Hyman or Gary Bird and Jamiroquai, and then there's In Excess and Simple Minds, and it's all in the mix. He plays 12 inches, he talks all over the records. It's amazing, and it's so unpolished, it's brilliant.
Shouts out to Ryan and Claire from Stevenage, Top Pineapples. Thank you. Shouts out to Shelfside, John Banton in the black cab, Dan Tunes. Jane and Tony, in Meppham. Ken locked and loving any chance of Funboy free Bananarama. It ain't what you do. Thanks, great show. I don't think I've got that with me today. Morning all, big up Josh Watts, locked in, locked on. Monday breakfast from 6 a.m. Josh Watts in the house. Big up Josh.
Unpolished, but brilliant. Let's have another one from Mona.
The one I'm going to pick now, I'll tell the backstory as well. I went to an evening with Ira Glass from This American Life, who's one of my heroes, and he played a clip from this podcast that I'm going to play, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. He picked out all the faults and how they could do things better. But when I listened to it, I was like, oh, this is great. It's called The Reveal Podcast, and it's presented by Al Letson. And it's a home for investigative journalism. And they cover stories from around America. And they get in really in-depth stories. And they turn, you know, everyday topics. Like when the Me Too campaign was going on, they spun it on the people that wouldn't have a voice. So they did a piece about immigrant women who are being sexually assaulted on night shifts, and how these stories weren't being told, and how these women are still part of the Me Too, and how this has been going on for ages. And then they also do funny things like, you know, art galleries that are selling fake art at like millions of pounds and people not knowing. So I absolutely love it. It's interesting stories that are told really well, and they don't use any fancy tricks. It's quite unpolished sometimes, but the stories are always absolutely incredible.
So let me get this straight. The state is threatening to prosecute you for having a document that the state sent you in the first place. How did you feel when you read that?
I mean, I'm angry. I was angry when I got this. I think this is counter to our First Amendment. I think this is counter to the principles of free press. I'm stunned. I'm stunned, especially when you understand what these records actually are.
The records are a list of current, former, and aspiring police officers in California who've been convicted of breaking the law cops are supposed to enforce. There were nearly 12,000 names, each listed next to a crime, from disorderly conduct to sexual assault to murder. So why did the state want Robert to destroy the list?
Everything on here, every name on here, is someone who has been convicted of a crime. And court records are public. Those are open.
Is it because these are police officers?
It is. I don't know. It certainly seems suspicious.
That's the Reveal podcast. Chris Knowles, reveal your final choice.
Also, if you've heard some rumbling of my tummy or something.
I was going to thank you for the intestinal adventures.
Just because somebody has to confess, right? I'm just being honest. So I've chosen, because obviously I listen to lots of radio, and last week, Steve Lamack, who's one of my presenters, so I shall say, you know, vested interest. It was the Independent Venue Week, and they went on tour. They've done it a few times, a few years running.
This is on Six Music.
This is on Six Music. But this year, they decided to go in a tour bus, the whole production team, and they had the little studio in the bus, and they went to five locations, Newcastle, Sheffield, Cardiff, Exeter, and Brixton. And I just thought I'd pick it out, because actually, I know it's what BBC should be doing, but certainly Six Music should be doing, is supporting independent venues, and they know they have done for several years. But what was really interesting about the programme was that it was not just the Six Music Steve Lamack programme. It was connecting to different parts of the UK and the communities within it, music communities, obviously the venues themselves, the artists that have been there. And the clip I've picked out is from Thursdays, which was the one in Exeter at the Cavern. And Frank Turner did a set for them on the bus, but also obviously then in the Cavern in the evening. And I just thought it was one of those fascinating things where we in the radio industry do tend to sometimes think it's just about London. And it was fascinating to hear some voices from journalists in the local area and for musicians and stuff to actually just be on Six Music, and then Six Music going to them as opposed to the other way around.
There you go, round of applause from our crew on the bus. Frank Turner live on the Homecoming Tour bus in Exeter. The Homecoming Tour bringing artists back to where they grew up or to venues which were important to them on the way up. Frank plays the Cavern in Exeter tonight. Your first visit to the Cavern would have been with your old band, Million Dead.
Million Dead.
May the 30th, 2002, I found a piece which said they played to a room of Marilyn Manson fans who exited the room as soon as they took the stage. Is that right?
That was the story. Well, so basically we got booked. It wasn't like a tour or like a punk gig. It was like a sort of student-y, heavy-ish music club night thing that we somehow got booked for. And we drove all the way down from London. And there was, you know, there was a good 100 people in the club. That felt pretty good for us back then. But the Cavern sort of got two sides to it. There's sort of the bar side and the dance floor side. And we set up and we're the only band and there were DJs. And I just vividly remember them playing The Beautiful People, which was the surefire metal club hit at the time. And then that stopped and we went into our weirdo angular and at the time not especially well rehearsed noise core thing that we did, and everyone just went into the other side of the bar and left no one in there.
The Mighty Lamo and Frank Turner and all their chums on Six Music in Exeter. Thanks then to Moon Ahmed from Prison Radio, to Nick Goodman, to Chris North. Thanks to Guilt Free Studios for having us, and to John for engineering. And special thanks this week to Ian Dale from LBC, who wrote an article in which he picked some of his favourite podcasts, and one of them was this one.
No.
Isn't that great? And
Ian.
We'd love to have Ian on it, but of course, he works for a radio station that won't allow him to come on.
Good luck with that one, Trevor.
That's a shame, isn't it? Anyway, thanks for listening. This has been the February Roundtable, and we'll have another one probably in March. Radio Moments,
David Boyd. If you're on air in the launch sequence of a large radio station, the chances are you won't be forgotten.
And good morning, everyone. In very little time now, it will be my pleasure and privilege to launch Radio 1 and 2. All of us here who have worked so hard during these past weeks have done so with two principal aims in view: to provide you with a better service of popular music and a greater measure of choice. A good deal of publicity has surrounded the plans for Radio 1, because in many ways it represents a new concept for BBC Radio. Radio 1 is designed to be young in heart and in style. And Radio 2 is much more than the old light programme shed of its 247-metre wavelength.
And I spent a lot of time at home with my own tape recorder, taping people and so on. And there was no doubt in my mind which was the best run station, which was Radio London. I didn't want to just lift Radio London off and transplant it to Radio 1.
Well, in a few moments, it's going to be 7 o'clock... time for the first Tony Blackburn show on Radio 1, whilst Breakfast Special continues on Radio 2 with Paul Hollingdale. And then, of course, at 8:30, there'll be Junior Choice with Leslie Cryver. At 5 to 10, 9:55, 5 to 10 on Radio 2, and on Radio 1, the first instalment, the first programme in our new competition, Crack the Clue. But now, with the clock ticking slowly up to 7 a.m., it's going to be time to welcome Radio 1's first early show on 247 metres medium wave, whilst Breakfast Special continues on Radio 2. 10 seconds to go before Radio 1, Tony Blackburn, and Radio 2, Paul Hollingdale. Stand by for switching. Get tuned to Radio 1 or 2. 5, 4, 3. Radio 2, Radio 1, go.
Those most famous of words. And so it went. Robin Scott, who died this week 20 years ago. He ran the light programme and effectively became the first controller of both Radio 1 and Radio 2. The BBC prepares for cuts. Last time around, they chose to network the evening show on BBC Local Radio. Its first presenter was Mark Forrest, who ended his tenure this week 3 years ago.
Foundation said, and build me up, Buttercup. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the bits and pieces we've found to replay for you over the past 3 hours. This is the last time I'll be with you on this show, so before I go, could I say thank you for your company over the past 4 years. It's been an absolute joy for me to be here, listening to so many interesting stories and chatting to you on the air and reading the many hundreds of texts and tweets and emails and Facebook posts that you've sent me.
And you know what? Even if you've never...
Mark Forrest, now heard on Scala and reading the news elsewhere too. This week, very well as well. This week, 3 years ago, Ian Lee on Talk Radio stumbled across something.
Someone in power, someone in authority in a radio network had these thoughts, typed them down, heading New Music Links, Speed Links, Crunch and Roll. I don't even know what that means. Crunch and roll? You haven't. Crunch and roll. Okay. Always say, then in bold letters, all the biggest hits all day long at the top of the link. Then in bold letters, never the end. All the biggest hits all day long at the top of the link. Don't do it at the end, guys, because if you do, a baby dies. Say the station name into the new song, you idiots. That's obvious, isn't it? If you're going into the new song, you say the station name.
And so it went on, Ian Lee on Style Guides. Ken Bruce is 69 this week, and that's an excuse, I think, to enjoy this from April Fool's Day 2011, when Rob Brydon hosted his show as Ken, and then the two met. Spot the difference.
200.
Ah, wonderful stuff, Lynn. Thank you very much for the medication. Right now, I have an announcement to make.
Really?
It's been a special show today for many reasons. One of them, no less than today, I finish. It's my last
show. Is this your last show?
On BBC Radio 2. Taking over from me next week is my brother, Ken, also Ken Bruce, but with two M's. And I've asked him to come in now and have a wee look around. Ken, hello.
Hello, Ken. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm absolutely great. I've loved the show.
I love the show, too.
It's been great. You've been doing it how long now?
I've been doing it since about 9:30.
Oh, really? All right.
Really?
And next week, I've got to do all this myself.
I've got to do all this, yeah. It sounds like a Bay City role, though. What's going on?
It's going to be quite difficult because you've been really interesting this morning. I thought it was unusual.
I've raised the bar, Ken.
Yeah.
You know, today. I mean, I've been doing it here for a very long time, as you know.
Yeah.
Oh, very long, actually. And what's the people are talking about? They say, well, Ken, who are you saying with Harry? Botmaster, Lynn Bowles. Love songs.
Wonderful stuff. Happy birthday, Ken Bruce. In Northern Ireland, it's 30 years since Downtown split its frequencies, launching a new brand, Cool on FM.
Good morning and welcome to Cool FM, the new music radio service from Downtown Radio. Broadcasting 19 hours a day on 97.4 FM. We hope you will enjoy our programs, which will feature the music and lifestyle of the 90s. It's just gone 8:30. Stand by for Neil McLeod on The Breakfast Show and thanks for tuning our way.
97.4 Cool FM, launching in Belfast this week in 1990. So, with the first Greenwich time signal pips 96 years ago...
Yeah, pips a little later there, but there we are, they arrived in the end.
Wyvern splitting AM and FM 24 years ago.
I'm Neil McLeod, going to be doing breakfast over the coming days, weeks, months, and if the boss will let me, years.
The launch of commercial radio in Mansfield 21 years ago.
Your new local radio station. Now, one of the most important things that we'll be doing here on Mansfield 103.2 is playing your favourite music.
John Snagg breaking the news of the King's death on the Home Service 68 years ago.
The BBC offers profound sympathy to Her Majesty the Queen and the Royal Family. The BBC is now closing down for the rest of the day, except for the advertised news bulletins and summaries, shipping forecasts and gale warning.
And Communicore acquiring 8 global stations after that ruling by the Competition Commission 6 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.